All you did is just opened up and started booing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 96 of Sapnin Podcast with my absolutely fine self, Sean Smith, and my moderate to fair-looking co-host, Morgan Richards, also known in the rap community as Mo Dick.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and this episode will engineer a perfect mixture of music, conversations, and gutter phenomenons.
Well, do you know what? For once, right? I knew that was coming then, right? Mm. Normally, for anybody listening for the first time, every week, Morgan, to a deadline, comes up with a pun at the start using song titles or album titles by the guest, right? I hate them. For the most part, I hate them. But this week, I was thinking, what's he going to do? Because it's not a band this week. We're not interviewing a band, so to speak, this week. What's he going to do? And do you know what? I enjoyed them.
Finally, I've done one. This is 96. Episode 96. And I've finally done a pun that you are proud of. And I'm over the moon.
Whoa. Proud is a bit fucking far. Proud's a bit far. Reel that in. Proud's not the word, but happier with it. Yes, if you haven't read the title of this episode, and I don't know how you've managed to get this far without it, our guest this week is the fantastic, lovely, one of the most enthusiastic and nicest guests we've ever had. This week, our guest is Machine the Producer.
Yes. Now, if you're a regular listener to us, you would have heard about Machine the Producer countless times from a variety of musical guests, a true character in our seeing world industry, the lot. He's regarded as such an important figure to a lot of acts' success, creative process, and progression. Really, an underground hero in the producing world, and most importantly, a man behind the desk to some of our favourite albums and bands, Sean.
Yeah, he's done some absolutely incredible bands. Yeah, who's he done? Lamb of God, Every Time I Die.
I've got a whole list.
You've got
here.
A list?
Should I just list off a load of his discography?
Yes, go for it.
Well, he has worked with the likes of Every Time I Die, Fall Out Boy,
nice.
Lamb of God,
good.
Gym Class Heroes,
Wicked.
Clutch,
nice.
4 Years Strong,
lovely.
Cobra Starship, As It Is, The Amity
great.
Infliction,
good.
Rome, Preston
nice.
Miko,
yes.
Suicide Silence,
brilliant.
Miss May I, Crossfaith,
cracking.
Chiodas, Mindless Self Indulgence, Head PE, Grayscale, White Zombie, and so many more.
Pronounce MSI again?
Miss May I.
No, not Miss May I. Mindless what?
Mindless Self-Indulgence.
Oh, you said it right that time. But yeah, what an unbelievable array of bands. Armour for Sleep. Yeah, we missed them off. He's worked with Jared Way, if you're from Wales. We actually speak to Machine about working with Jared Way and what that was like. And I just want to say a massive, massive thank you to Machine for doing this podcast. Genuinely, when we did it was so nice to see him, and his enthusiasm for music is contagious. It literally made me, I was having a bit of a miserable day before we started speaking to Machine, but as a true professional I managed to click into it. But seeing Machine and his love and admiration for music got me excited, and part of me wants to one day hope Raiders could do something with Machine, because I think that could be magic.
Yeah, Well, this episode is so fun. There's some great stories. We have an amazing amount of laughs. And it's just full of energy. He's such a character, and you're about to hear it. But we get to know his story, how he got into being a producer, his famous Barn Studio in Austin, Texas. Really some different kind of methods when recording with bands that will blow you away. The difference between mixing, mastering, what's all that kind of about, and just countless stories with so many bands he's worked with, Wanna worked with. I mean, he's just got a phenomenal career, and we're going to hear all about it.
Yes, the Fantastic Machine is this week's guest on episode 96 of Sapling Podcast. Also, we need to give a shout out to Marcy Jacobson for hooking us up with Machine. Oh, this is a funny story. A quick one. Marcy messaged me saying, can I give you a number to Machine? And I was like, of course you fucking can. That's mental. Yeah, please do. Machine texts me saying, hey, it's Machine, in brackets, the producer, right? And I didn't reply to him at the time because I was a little bit starstruck, I'll be honest with you. I love his work. I was just like, ooh. My first thought was, should I reply with, oh, lucky you wrote in brackets the producer, because I wouldn't have known of all of the Machines that's constantly texting me. But yeah, thanks very much to Machine for doing this. Thank you very much for trusting me with your number. I promise I won't sell it to dodgy scam people.
Yeah, well, this has actually been one in the making for quite a while, because we have connected with Machine before. We've wanted to do it, and now this is the perfect opportunity to have a chat.
Yes. So as some of you might have heard on previous episodes, we mention our brilliant Patreon podcast community, the Sap Fam. And one day I was checking my emails, and I checked the sapningpodcast@gmail.com email. And there was an email in there from Patreon saying, you have a new Patreon. Machine is now a Patreon. And I was like, it can't be the producer, Machine, is it? And then I went on it, and it was exactly him. So, unbelievable, he became a part of our Patreon, and he's a secret Patreon member. So, thank you very much to Machine for the support.
Yeah, see, yeah. You never know who's going to be part of our Sapning cult community. So if you'd like to become a part of our Patreon and find out some more mad bastards that are in there, why not head over to patreon.com/Sapning, get involved with our wonderful community, more bonus content online, and become a member of the family.
Please do it. Every penny goes into keeping us alive / making this podcast.
True.
We know times are tough right now for people, so we genuinely appreciate anybody who is part of the Patreon and has been part of the Patreon or is considering being part of the Patreon. But we would like you that a little bit more if you did become a Patreon. So stop being a bastard.
Yes, we would. We very much appreciate it. And we're fast approaching our 100th episode, and we've got some very secret celebrations behind the scenes going on around that time as well that you'll find out, and might even get more things being a part of that Patreon. But as well, please remember to go and give us a follow on our social media pages at SapningPod.
At SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD.
Go and like everything, retweet our stuff, share it, put it in your Instagram stories, and send us a message. Are you enjoying the podcast? Who would you like to hear on future episodes? And all that malarkey. But while you're messaging us, I've noticed lately we've talked a lot about your band Raiders, Sean, because you've been non-stop at it. There's loads of things going on. You've got a new track out, a new video, you've recorded a secret cover. But this week you've been announced that you'll be performing at 2000 Trees Festival 2021.
Yes we have. Thank you very much to the people of 2000 Trees for having Raiders again this year. By now I believe the cover that we did is out. I don't know whether you know, but about 2 weeks ago 2000 Trees got in touch with Raiders and said, could you do a cover? I thought the answer was going to be no, but apparently, according to everybody else in my band, the answer was yes. So we've knocked up a Thrice cover in a week, and we shot a video in my friend Scott and Sophie's garage, mainly Sophie's garage. So yeah, check that out, and just check out Raiders Band UK. Anyway, stop talking about me. Let's talk about fucking Machine. Let's get into this shit.
Tidy, this is the wonderful Machine. You're going to be gasped at some of his stories.
Gasped? Is that a...
I'm sticking with it.
Adjective or whatever the right word
maybe.
Is.
Maybe. Who knows?
I don't know what
it is. I've created a new one. That's how good this episode is, Sean. Let's get on with it. Let's go on with it. Satmin.
You're not getting away with that, you fucking prick. No. Yeah, you are. Yours Machine. He's fucking brilliant. I love him. Satmin!
Satmin.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sapnin! Sapnin! Yes! Yes! Can't believe it! Yes!
I got to say this! Dude, that's awesome!
Yeah, this week's guest is the fantastic producer, musician, and all round top chap, Machine.
Yes!
Machine, hey. How are you?
I'm good, dudes. Thank you for having me on the coolest podcast. Aww. One of the.
Thank you very much.
With so many of my favorite bands. I feel just so connected already.
Yeah.
Well, we've got, before we start, we have to mention, I think you have been talked about on this podcast probably more than the majority of people ever, more than us in many ways, by some of the guests we've had on in the past.
That's right.
Like 4 Year Strong, Amity Infliction, as it is. I mean, countless. So
I was just running this morning. I was like, I better do my research. I didn't even know Rome was on here, and Rome was one as well. And you guys were, that was funny, talking about all the spiders in Texas and whatnot. Yeah, there's more too. I didn't even know. Yeah, I meant to go through it all. You have so many episodes now. I believe is this your 100th episode, guys, with me?
No, not yet.
Oh,
sorry.
Bummer. Loser Machine. No, I couldn't be the 100th guy. Oh, darn. I knew it.
Oh. Yeah. Well, sorry, part of me is holding out for Fred Durst. There's a little bit of me that is open. That somehow I've DM'd him. He's seen it, but he hasn't replied. But the part of me is just holding out for Fred Durst for episode 100.
How sick would that be? The comeback. The comeback of Fred Durst. You were there, right? You're not that young. You guys were for the takeover of Limp Bizkit.
Well, yeah, they're the reason I got into rock, because I was into there's like an indie band from South Wales called Stereophonics, and I was like, I was into them, and then I saw Fred Durst swearing 48 times on Hot Dog, and I was like, oh, you can swear and shout. That's two things I can do. Yes. So, he literally became my hero, and then, in 2012, my old band, The Blackout, got to support them, and I ended up
singing
with them, yeah. So, there's video
on
YouTube.
That's so cool, Sean.
Yeah, 16-year-old me is, literally jizzing
in
his pants.
That must have been insane. Yeah, he was really, the don of the record industry for a while there. He sort of, came in and took the sort of hip-hop business angle, for the rock scene, He was just a dominating force. And that was in the days I was, you know, I was a rap rock producer in those days, you know.
Yeah.
Head PE, do you remember that band?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They had a song called Blackout. actually, right, check, this is a story about Head PE. The Blackout got offered our first, like, proper tour with a band called Fight Star in the UK. And we literally turned down one date in Edinburgh because we got offered to support Head PE in Cardiff.
Nice.
And we were like, yes, I love nu metal. I have to support Head PE at some point. And we turned up and, yeah, we played to about seven people.
That's
and,
it?
Yeah, and the guitarist, well, he hated us. He absolutely, because we had two guitars either side. He made us put both guitars on the one side because his was over there.
I wonder if that was Wes. That might have been Wes. It's either Wes or Chad.
But yeah, how was recording with, like, Head PE?
Oh, that was, I mean, I'm not, I have to be careful what I say about bands. A lot of personal things I could say.
Yeah.
They were fucking crazy. I mean, straight up bona fide nuts. And, you know, I seem to produce a lot of bands often in their most crazy times. Lamb of God with the, you know, probably the peak of their alcoholism, which now they're all straight. Head PE, bro. That was pure insanity. Not short of making great records, but by the second record, so I did Broke and Blackout. Blackout was the second one. By then, things were just going crazy. Yes, having sex with each other's girlfriends and too many drugs. I remember Wednesdays, the band therapist would come into the live room.
What?
Dude, listen, it's hilarious, but you know, when you're a big band, I mean, they're a big band at the time. When you're a big band, you know, there's a lot of people invested in a band, you know? It's like, you see these Metallica videos where it's like, what the fuck? But it's like, think about it as a corporation, right? Think about how many people are involved in a band at that level. You have touring people, manager people, label people. So it's like any corporation or business, there's an incentive to keeping things together. So, I mean, it was just getting insanely crazy. I broke up a fist fight in pre-production.
Wow.
Between the singer and I believe Wes, the guitar player, who's probably the one that told you to move your amps over to one side. Yeah, it was fucking nuts. It was fucking nuts.
Wow. Wow. Incredible. I mean, yeah, this sounds like there's so many stories and there's so much things we want to talk about with you that we're going to dissect it and get into. But just to start, how are things with you lately? I know you've been traveling quite a lot, even though in this weird time, trying to work with artists. You just got back from working with Preston Miko on their new album in a castle somewhere?
Yeah, dude. Well, crazy. So, of course, they were supposed to come to the Barn Studio in Austin, Texas, right? I mean, that's kind of what the deal is. Everyone wants to come to, right? And that's the norm these days. You know, producers have their own studios. And it was, you know, it's a COVID thing. At first, it seemed like when COVID first hit, right, it was like way worse in the big cities. New York was really bad. England was really bad. London was really bad. So, for sure, it was like, yeah, you know, we had to wait till things calmed down, and for sure they were just going to come here. And I said, and then it kind of changed around. Texas got kind of cocky, and as they do, you know, with their guns and and their freedoms, which we love. But yeah, and then it just got really bad in Texas. And then technically, their government, they couldn't travel to Texas. So I was saying all this time prior, I was like, you know, I'm never gonna have to travel to England. I was just saying cocky, like, yeah, guys, you know, hey, I'll come out there and we'll just do a DIY no matter what if you can't come here. And it turns out, like, they couldn't come in. But for some reason, of all the countries that were banned from coming into England, the U.S., probably the worst country for COVID right now, can still go into England. So I was like, okay, machine, we got this buddy who owns this castle in the Cotswolds, right? We're doing this. We did it with minimal gear and incredible atmosphere, and it came out fucking insane. I'm starting to mix it right now. It was no short of creativity and cool vibe, and wow, incredible. I am so excited for this record. for you guys to hear it.
Yeah,
me and me and Morgan got to speak to them for 2000 Trees Festival this summer for like an interview thing before they like played live or whatever. And they are such lovely, lovely chaps. So
tell me about it.
Yeah, I want to do a full episode with them soon. So
yeah, when they're like closer to the record, obviously coming out, you know, for sure.
Was that your first time recording in a castle?
I've recorded in Metropolis Studios in London. It's kind of castle-like, right? Back in the day when you would, when there was ridiculous money in the record industry and you would just throw away billions of dollars on studios and that was what you did.
Yeah, right? We wasted quite a bit of money in Air Studios in London.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I don't think I've worked there, but I've heard of that.
Yeah, we pissed a lot of money away there trying to be Oasis 2. Because we knew Oasis had been there, so we were like, "Oh yeah, let's go there then."
So, Sean, when you were making records for Blackout, was it in that time period where, you know, the model for the record industry, the record companies were just spend lots of money on making a record, right? Was it that time period where you had to just go broke?
No, I think we came just at the end of that. I think like we were just like we were too late for that, but we were like just on the cusp of like the internet helping, so like we did well out of like MySpace and stuff like that.
Okay.
But then for over a year for like money spending on records as well, it was kind of just gone. So but I was always like, all right, okay, we got a friend who knows somebody at A, so we were like, okay, yeah, let's do whatever. And then so we ended up recording there, which was cool. Massive ridiculous studio that we didn't need to do it in.
And, totally.
apparently George Michael was upstairs in the studio all the time just smoking weed.
What?
And I was if I'd known that now, I'd have been
you
would
just rushed up there.
Yeah, imagine David George Michael on a Blackout record. That's the last thing anybody would have expected.
No, sorry, but it would have been awesome.
Have you never mentioned this story before?
I know.
How is this the first time?
I don't know. One of the guitarists of the Blackout spent the whole recording session, when he wasn't recording guitar, sitting outside waiting to see George Michael walk in or out. And he never saw him. Aww. Never saw him. He was there, though, but we never saw him. That's insane. And I'll finish this off and then we carry on. There's another funny element of the story is not long before we went to record in A Studios, George Michael was intoxicated allegedly one night. Yeah, I gotta get that in for our lawyer's sake. And then he crashed into a local shop. Right, so we went to go see the local shop he crashed into, and the dent in the shop, some genius had written Wham!
That's awesome. It makes so much sense.
It's like Michael.
That's just like the old Batman. Wham! Bam! Splash!
What's talking of weird places you've recorded, where do you think the weirdest place you have recorded something is?
Well, I mean, there's so many things to think of, man. I mean, one that's infamous is, and I think is totally weird, is Rockfield, which is this famous studio in Wales. Queen recorded there. It was crazy. We like watching Bohemian Rhapsody. I was like, oh my God, they actually took certain shots from the actual studio. That was cool to like watch with my kids and go, I was there. That was fucking weird though, because like you're just out on this. I don't see why that studio has all this history. Why the fuck do people want to go out to a muddy farm? Miserable money farm. And then, you know, so these residential studios have these, you know, you stay there and there's no place to get out and do anything. And then there's a chef. And it's a really bad, it's like, you know, it's like at the time where, you know, food isn't really looked upon as like a big thing. So it's like horrible chef. And then you start to arguing about what horrible meal the horrible chef's going to make. And as the weeks go by, it just gets weirder and weirder being isolated there. That was kind of nuts. I've been in all kinds of pre-production is always interesting because such an incredible, important part of making a record. But pre-production is basically free. You know, it's like you just get into a rehearsal room. I always like to bring a little recording gear to document ideas, but it's like you're not going to pay for a studio for that. So it's just random places, like random shitty rehearsal rooms. I've been in leaky basements and just all sorts of kooky places that you wouldn't expect, you know, wherever
Yeah, well, how did you... I guess we should really ask how you kind of got into producing, I suppose, really. Yeah, and then, like, how do you end up working with certain bands as well?
Well, it is very, you know, it's kind of very organic, you know. I think it would be the same thing. I don't think you sign up or apply for a job for record producer. It's a lifestyle job, as it is for being in a band. You know, you don't just say, I'm going to be in a band and get a big tour, right? You have to build it. So it's like, I grew up in playing in bands, as we all did. And it just, you know, trying hard in circumstance kind of organically found me into being a producer. My band in high school was like, we were a cover band, but we would do like heavy versions of like the funkier hip hop songs. Like we would do like Doing the Butt and all sorts of like funky hip hop inspired danceable things that we could make rock out of. That's what our thing was. And this was, oh my God, this is maybe 10 years prior to rap rock, right? Then naturally, so I was a guitar player in this band, right? Eddie Van Halen was the coolest thing. So then when I first started getting into music, I could just get started. I just had an Atari computer and a sampler. And I was also really into hip hop stuff, right? I was a guitar player, but I was really into hip hop stuff. Again, now 8 years prior to rap rock, who knows what? And so the first thing I started experimenting with was just making beats, hip hop beats, and putting guitar stuff to it. All long before this, and I just knew like this felt really cool. I could play my Eddie Van Halen riffs to like Kiss FM, which was like the R&B rap station in New York. I was like, this is so fun. I went to Teaneck High School, which was a very mixed high school as far as, you know, urban black culture and white guys. Right. And like I went to, if you know, Das FX was a popular rap group in the 90s. I went to high school with those guys, for example. So I kind of buddied up with some King Sun, D-Moet, some hip hop guys and as buddies. And I was just fascinated in making beats with them. So this naturally naturally became the way my music started to develop. It was like hip-hop-minded beats and rock guitars. And it would be rapping or singing. Again, rap rock didn't exist yet. It was just hints of it. And I was way on this tip. Loving it, having so much fun. It was my hobby. It was my thing. It's how I wrote music. And it was a difficult, difficult skill. Because if you're in a studio and you had tape, it's like there wasn't automatic loops. There wasn't Ableton Live where you just drop in and loops morph. It was like a tricky thing to do. You had tape. You had to put sync on the tape, slave a sequencer, time up beats and loops. And it was a tricky thing to do. Not a lot of people could do it. And it was just what me and my buddy Clinton and some of the other hip hop guys that we were into. And we had the minimal gear to do it. So when I started making my music, I would try to, you know, do like the first demo tape and I'm going to play for record companies, this and that, right? This was the day where you could actually, if you tried harsh, you could get a meeting with a record company guy or just show them a demo tape, right? And they would look at this and go, this is really dope. This is cool. There's really no place for this. But will you apply this to one of our artists and remix our artists? I was like, sure. And one of those was White Zombie. Where,
nice.
And I was like, yeah. And so I started. Oh, also, Galliano. Remember Galliano in England? They were another one. This acid jazz scene.
Oh, I don't know.
This is definitely before your time now. So naturally, I just started having these relationships. I think if this was happening today, you would call me a DJ, right? Because
okay.
DJs now are like the creative DJs now are like a really amazing producer, Skrillex type people. They're guys that make music as well, not just guys that spin records. But you wouldn't call me a DJ then. I was just like a remix kid or whatever, a tracks kid. And then I had no intention of being a record producer whatsoever. And then I was doing these remixes, and I had a friend who is managing, kind of playing manager of my band back in the day. He was an English guy. And shout outs to Paul Adams. Thank you, Paul. And then he eventually was working at a small producer management firm. And I, at this point, I was also now at my buddy's Clinton studio recording small bands, you know, and hip hop stuff, both. So something came in. It was a band that incorporated tons of loops, like a Beck type thing, right? And it came into this proper producer management firm, and they didn't really have anyone that suited for doing this. And Paul's like, yo, there's this kid in New Jersey, Machine. He would kill this. You should give him a chance. And it was the first signing to V2 Records. No, second signing. Stereophonics was the first signing. And this was a band called the Kings of Infinite Space. And they were just, it was just a kid and his four track that wrote great songs. There wasn't a band yet, but it was like Beck. It was like lots of loops and
yeah.
beats and guitars and kooky white boy funky shit, right? So, and they were like, this kid, Paul was like, this kid Machine would kill this. You should give him a chance. And I'd already done a few remixes that were kind of known. I mean, the White Zombie stuff was like double platinum, I think, at the time, which was nice. Nuts, right? As a remix, which is nuts. So they flew him out. We did three tracks, loved it. All of a sudden, I was a major label producer. They asked me to do the record. I flew out to England. Next record, Pitch Shifter. Next record comes, who the fuck is putting drum and bass beats over punk rock guitars? Well, there's this one remix for White Zombie.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, and they're signed to Geffen at this time. I'm like, well, who did that? We're like, oh, this Machine Gun. They're like, well, okay. And the second record, Pitch Shifter, bam. Now that was, that didn't blow up, that record, but if you were in the industry then, that was hot as shit. That was like one of those records where everyone had to stop for a minute and check out that record. It was like super buzzy in the industry. And that was, it's funny because I'm always like chasing that dream of having such a cutting edge record like that again, you know. It's so hard.
Yeah, well, that's insane to see like how far your career kind of evolved into that stage to get into it. But if we can kind of take a step back, really, I mean, we've had loads of producers on the podcast before where they've digged into records they've made or bands they've been a part of as well on the side, but no one's really explained a real role, their role as a producer. I mean, how would you actually describe the work you do? How would you explain it to the average music fan? Because I think a lot lately bands are talking more about their producers and who they've worked with, but I don't really think it's being explained that well to an audience.
Okay, that's a really, really good question, man. And bands need to know this shit. Let's start by saying the word producer is very gray. It's a very gray area, especially when it comes to heavier bands, because it means a lot. It can mean a lot of different things. It's like there are a lot of, I don't want to put anyone down, but there's a lot of producers in heavy music that are really just great engineers, and they're not creative. They're not as creative people or visionary people. People come into this in all different kinds of ways. A lot of times, someone was, had a strong role in a successful band, and now they're producing. So they're very guitar minded. Let's say they were a big guitar player or a drummer or whatever. It's really, you hear all kinds of things. So bands really need to do their research, and they should really spend time figuring out a way to hang out and talk to their producer, potential producers, and learn. Now there's the disclaimer, right? Now I could give you an explanation of what I think a record producer is, right? The way I approach it. I am a musician, but I don't like to ever pick up a instrument on a record. I'm very musical, but I don't feel that's my role. There's other producers that do. They get frustrated and bored and aggravated, and they you even hear stories of producers like fixing guitar parts behind the scenes or saying, just let me play this. That's the last thing I'll do. I as a record producer, I like to envision myself as what a movie director is, right? There's a script and there's actors, right? So the band are writing the script or most of the script, the story, which is the music, and the celebrities and actors as well, like to be the actors. And I'm the director, whereas I'm sort of looking at how to sell that story the best way, looking at how to connect that story and those actors to their audience, bringing out the best performances in them, improving upon that story, i.e. the songwriting, as much as possible, and really just connecting the dots on making that, turning that into, I hate to say the word product, but turn that into a piece of artwork slash product that is going to connect with who it's supposed to connect with. It's a lot of sociology, music sociology, thinking of groups of people and what they're into and emotionally and why. And yeah, that's the way I look at it.
Okay.
Nice.
And that's why, I think that's why I'm kind of successful. I mean, I do that well, you know? I do that well. You just had Four Year Strong on, and that kind of came up. They were kind of saying, he's very emotional, he's very this. It's like, but I remember Four Year Strong once telling me back in the day, they go, in some ways we think you know our band better than we know our band. Because, I mean, I chased them down so hard back in the day because I had the code. I had the secret for them. I knew it. I saw them like, right, they're bearded, tattooed guys. They're kind of, they like roll with these multiple tribes. They're like down with the metal kids, yeah, down with the heavier stuff. But really, it's disguised poppier music. It's like, it's got metalisms. I'm like, this, I got it. I'm like, all we have to do is like bring out, you know, like dress it up as metal as fuck, but like, you know, keep it major and keep it as big and poppy as possible. And these guys will just connect. They'll be like sorority girls' favorites.
Well, I was going to bring that up because, you know, as you said, Dan from 4 Year Strong mentioned the fact that you're not the type of producer who will say, oh, you know, this needs to be in C major or and you should add this part and whatever. You're more, you create an atmosphere that makes them do something a little different or directed them in a way to get the best out of themselves.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And if I knew it was supposed to be in C major, I wouldn't say it. I would make them figure it out. I would create an atmosphere where I felt this part feels uncomfortable, and I would create an atmosphere for them to figure it out and it be theirs. And that's how they'll believe in it, and that's how they'll be pumped on it, and that's also how it will translate to success, I feel.
Nice. Yeah, I was watching a video of you recording vocals with Randy from Lamb of God. And you made him go for a run before coming in for a take, and just he was knackered. Yeah. And
that was like method. That was like in method acting. There's like method producing, right? It was like that was the end of the song "Walk with Me in Hell," yeah. And so he's supposed to be completely. If you're listening to the lyrics, he's supposed to be like completely beat up and destroyed. So I was like, I want you to just destroy yourself before this ending screams. And he was like, "What the fuck?" And you know. Just he wasn't in very good shape, I have to say. But it's a horrible video because he's running in, right, and I'm like, he's like sweating and out of breath, and I keep pushing the mic back in his face. He's like trying to do it, and he's like pulling the mic, and I'm like shoving the thing back in his face, and people are like, damn, Machine, you're like kind of crazy, dude.
but with that, I mean, what's some of the weirdest methods you've used to try and get like a special sound or something out of a band like that?
Or you've seen other people using and you've gone, surely that doesn't work, does it? Or anything like that?
It's more acting stuff, like method acting. I'll get people into a mood.
Okay.
To get what they want, to get good things out of them. And, you know, they're in on it. It's not like they love me for it, you know. And it doesn't work for everybody, by the way. It's like you got to kind of feel it out. You know, some people don't take to that very well, but most people do. So I love creating atmospheres for bands to record in. I mean, how cool is that, right? How fun is that? And amazing, inspirational is that as the artist? And there's so many things I could think of where I tried to do that. You know, there's this one for Blue Water Highway where there's a smoky, bluesy song, and I literally set up outside the barn, created a huge bonfire, and made him sing in front, like, as like the beginning of the take to the end take, he was starting to burn. Like, it was literally like, it was like he had to feel the heat of this fire. It had to do with the lyrics, and I was pumping the instrumental into the valley down by my barn and put mics 100 feet down there and captured the valley. Got a few people to witness it, filmed it. That's just one thing. Mitch, there's video on this too. Mitch from Suicide Silence. Remember Mitch?
Mm. Yeah.
Poor guy, rest in peace. He would tell me that when he would scream, he really, just from the way he would stand on stage, or he would like arc his body over, and that's how he was comfortable screaming and singing, like arched over. Like, and I'm like, well, what is it? He's like, well, I'm used to putting my foot up on the monitor, and this is how I feel. So I built this chamber for him to sing into. I made these low walls and this thing he could put his foot up on, and I put the mic down, you know, sort of, you know, like just 3 feet off the floor, pointing up. So Mitch would lean over and just use his hands, a cup around the mic, to scream, lean over, hunch, and voice, and voice the microphone. And that's how all those vocals were done.
Awesome.
And wow, he was just in his zone. It was very, very creative, very, and it wasn't too hard to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. That, I think that's the thing, see. I think a lot of people see producers and they think, oh, you know, that you're, I guess, people think of them as like glorified engineers, and I think a lot of people, like you said, producers like yourself are, yeah, just bring out the best and just make records so much better. Like when I've worked with record producers in the past, like I worked with Jason Perry. He used to be in a band called A. Well, he's still in a band called A, and yeah, he's done a bunch of different records. And that was the first time I kind of saw a producer where he was like, he became like part of the band, and yeah, it was more of a feeling than an engineer. We just need to get this done. It was all about just mood and where it took us, and you know, we only need to perform for an hour of the day, and then we can just hang out or whatever. And yeah, I think a lot of people listening to this will not understand the difference really. But I think,
and let me just say, as a disclaimer, you know, I'm an engineer. Of course, I'm an engineer too. And we could have this nerdy conversation about engineering all day. But I really don't feel that's my actual value. I mean, I feel like you could put a price tag on engineering. There's a lot of good engineers. But it's everything else you do to bring out the unique strengths in the band, see the vision of it. That's like what I feel, that's the real value in a record producer. There's a lot of great engineers, and I'm not one of the best engineers. You know, I'm good and I love it. I love it as well. But yeah, I don't think it's my value, really, my big value as a record producer.
But with that, do you feel like you get a bit more emotionally involved with the artists you work, and that you're doing these extra things, like what you mentioned with Mitch creating a whole chamber for him to just get that focal part down, that you want to do your best to try and get the best of the band? It's not just, okay, yeah, cool, record. You want to go out your way to get the best possible thing because you're that little bit more emotionally involved.
Look, I just believe that it's really a part of a formula for success. And like all of us, I want to do well. I want the bands to do well first and foremost, and I want to do well. And I'm only sitting here and talking to you today because I've been able to crack enough codes to figure this out, to do this long enough to still be here. You know, I think of it that way. It's like, I do believe that it translates into the final result of connecting with people. That's why.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it otherwise. You know?
Awesome. Yeah. And thinking from a kind of average music fan's viewpoint, one thing I've noticed a lot lately is that you'll have some bands that go to a producer to do a record, but it'll be completely like mixed or mastered or something like that from a different person, or even multiple people like that. Can you kind of share some insight on maybe why those kind of things happen, how it comes about? I mean, because I just imagine many, many people can see that on the list and go, well, why is it being sent off to this person now?
Well, not every producer engineer is a great mixer, and okay, some are, you know, they're known for doing both. So I do mix pretty much everything I produce. I'm also one of the guys that you could hire to mix a record that I didn't produce. I do that. I probably do that. I probably mix two out of three jobs. I'm probably just mixed jobs now for me. And I'm, as older I get, I'm pickier and pickier about the bands that I produce. But it doesn't, you know, there's a couple reasons. One, back in the day, more so, labels were more creatively involved on picking producers and mixers. And, you know, they're often with some labels and A&R guys have a theory that it can be a better perspective, having new ears for mixing. You know, as the money and the fame goes up, all sorts of interesting, weird things come into play. So there's very often a case where when there's a lot of money, you're going to go for a shit hot producer, engineer, recording, and the shit hot flavor of the moment mixer. That's super common. It really runs the gamut. And there are many scenarios for rock bands where it just makes sense having the all-in guy. They're just going to mix master the whole thing. Once in a while, you have a scenario where once in a while, you know, you hire a producer to record and mix, and it gets the mix time, and you think the band or the management or the A&R think, you know, he's not really connecting the dots on the mixes. If we have the money, we're going to try to go mix with someone else and get a new perspective. And I don't blame anyone for wanting to do that. Whatever, there's no formula or answer or necessarily even a right or wrong. It really depends on the project and the people you work with. But yeah, I mean, in regards to the guy you're interviewing today, that's me, the mechanical wonder boy. No, I do mix. Yeah. I do mix pretty much almost everything that I produce, you know, because people want that because I do some good mixes sometimes.
One of the things I wanted to mention is, you produced one of my favorite albums, Gutter Phenomenon. By the Every Time I Dies. Just
they
to
were
go
so
from
cool, dude.
Hot Damn, I think, yeah, you took a band who was kind of in the metalcore scene, I guess, and then made them you made them viable to more
Thank
people,
you.
I guess.
Thanks, man. Loved working with those guys. Loved them.
Yeah. How did that come about? How did
I think it was shortly after the first Lamb of God record. I think I was happened to wind up being the flavor of the month for the flavor of the moment for heavy music. Ironically, I don't know how, but that did happen. I didn't sign up to be a metal producer. It just happened. Yeah, honestly, I'm not joking. I didn't grow up listening to metal. It just friggin' happened. You know, just organically happened. It started with Lamb of God, admitting to Lamb of God that I'm really not the metal guy, and saying to Lamb of God all the problems I had at the time with metal. That's how I got the Lamb of God record. I was like, hi guys, what the fuck's up with metal? Like modern metal. I'm like, why do drums sound like drum machines? Why are guitars so scooped? Why does no one give a shit about bass guitar or even recording vocals? Like, what the fuck? And they were like, you got the job.
Nice.
And we made an interesting record. And so, yeah, so, and Carl Silverstein, which I call Carl Ferret, because he was doing Ferret Records at the time. My buddy Carl, he was awesome industry dude. Always had my back. He was a big part of getting me and Paul Conroy. I have to mention too. They were a big part of getting me the Lamb of God. They were also very involved with Every Time I Die, and they said, "You've got to do this Every Time I Die record." And my manager at the time, so it was like, "You're gonna love these guys, like you love System of a Down. They're kind of kooky, but rad." And he goes, "Give them a chance. You're gonna really like them." And the first time, and they were that just turned out to be one of the most insane, funnest, craziest records to make. The first time I met with them. First, I was just going to meet with them to feel it out. So we went to a studio in Hoboken, New Jersey, just to like record some demos to feel it out how we were going to be, right? So they show up. The first thing they do is they make me steal. They go across the street to like one of these huge supermarkets that kind of have like this deli, you know, where like there's like an open deli and you can pick what you want and you can weigh it. So they're like, yeah, we do this all the time, machine. We go on tour. We just, you know, we just like fill up and then we run out. We steal. I'm like, I can't do that. I live in this town. I'm older than, I mean, I can't, like, you have to do it, machine. You, this is what you do. You have to. I'm like, I'm really uncomfortable with this, guys. I'm like, so, and then we went into the studio and they had literally one song. I'm like, you're joking, right? They're like, no, we just have one song for real. I'm like, okay. So we recorded that one song. And anyway, we connected and later they came back, certainly with many more songs there and ready to make this record. But it was just nonstop hilarious. Probably the funniest band I've ever worked with, honestly. We had the fart mic in that session, which is too bad I don't have those tapes. We had, well, first of all, it started like this. They got this hot dog toaster, which is like, looks like a regular toaster, but it has these compartments where it perfectly fits these two hot dogs and perfectly warms these buns. It looks like a toaster. And then they go to like Costco. Do you have Costco? Or like,
yeah, we get it. Like, yeah.
And they come back with like a package of like 250 hot dogs. And all they're doing is making hot dogs in the studio nonstop. Like for months after they were gone, the studio just smelled like hot dogs. Oh, wow. We set up a microphone on a small platform of cinder blocks connected to, at the time, was a DAT player with a mic ready at ass height, ready to go into record at any moment. So no matter what we were doing at any moment, anyone who had a fart could run up to the fart mic, announce their name, and fart. And the reason it was so funny when you strung it all together is because of Andy. Because Andy had all the farts. Like, it would be like, when you play it back, it would be like, Andy, pfft, Andy, pfft, Andy, pfft, Jordan, pfft, Andy, pfft, Rat Boy, pfft, Andy, pfft, Andy, pfft, it, non-stop Andy. Brilliant. No one could get a fart in beside him. It's fucking amazing.
Did the fart, any of the farts make the record? Secretly mixed in?
No. We had a tiger, a roaring tiger on the record made it.
Yeah, was the, beginner killer music, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Jared Way's on that song as well, I believe.
Is that the song he's on?
Is that one?
Is that the one he's on? I have to check back. But yeah, I got to rock with Daryl Palumbo on that record from Glassjaw, yes. Head Automatica.
Yeah.
And Jared from My Chemical Romance, which is super cool.
Yeah, how did those work out? Did you like, did...
Oh, those were great.
Did they come in to do it or did they do it?
Yeah, they both did. And it was really cool working with both of those guys. Honestly, especially Daryl, because I'm just such a huge fan of his and his voice.
He's literally my favorite frontman of all time ever.
Me too.
Funnily enough, I also messaged him the other day and asked him to come on the podcast, but I haven't heard back as well.
That would be great. Another one of my favorite frontmen you had on your podcast would be Jason from Let Live or, you know, Fever 333.
You can't talk about one without the other.
Yeah, like these are just the very special It Boys, It Factor men of our time, right? Like there's something supernatural about these guys and it's so cool to get to know them, be buddies with them and get to work with them. However I have, you know, in the tiny little ways I have.
Yeah, how did the guesting on the songs with Every Time I Die work? Like, did you know before going in that Jared Way was going to do it? Or was it like, oh, we could ask Jared, he's in town? Or
it was them that they were putting it together, not me. So I'm not sure, but they did come. They came into the studio. That's when we were in Weehawken, right outside the Lincoln Tunnel. I was where the machine shop was for like the initial 12 years of my career. Yeah, they just came in and... you know, the tracks were already kind of ready to go at that point, and I'm sure they had heard the parts. They were like really quick and everything went really well. You know, it was just a good vibes all around and just cool to, you know, everyone was so pumped to get those guys on that record.
Oh, I bet. You know? Yeah. That would be my dream. to have a Daryl Plumbo guest spot on a song. Oh, please, one day.
Yeah, so that every time I die record is a really special. It's a really special one for me. I don't see, talk about like, you know, producing versus engineering. Like, I have to say, like, to this day, I'm not particularly chuffed with the guitar tones on that record. I would love to be the first to admit it. It's like some people say, oh, no, they're rad and they're kind of they're different. It's like, you know, it's like it was early. It was like a long time ago in my career. And the band were super into these Marshall JCM 800s that they have. And I think none of them were particularly good at the time. But it's like it was like a high school thing, you know, like. Like, you know, I've got to use my guitar. It's great because it's my guitar, right? You know, yeah, when you get your first guitar. Kind of, it's like some of the tones on that record, it sounds raw and badass. You know, that's what comes across, and that's why it connects with people. But, like, you know, on the engineering side, it's like, I'd love to redo some of that, but that's the way it goes, you know. But what came out song-wise, emotionally, that was a big step up for the band. It really connected. It you know, that record was a big launch point for the band.
Well, yeah, I think, well, to go on, to listen to any record since, I think you can hear influence from Gutter Phenomenon through everything they've done since. So
that's right.
Machine wins. but yeah, who was, sorry to have to ask, and you don't have to say names, I suppose, but you could tell us why. Has there been anyone really difficult to work with?
Yeah. But not normally. That's not the norm, because you kind of meet bands before. You know, there's like that feeling out process. But yeah, I've had some insane motherfuckers I've had to deal with, man. You know, there's like drug addiction and psychological issues. And, you know, it's like, it's a kooky culture of people. Now, I just want to say that's the norm. It's not. But I've been doing this long enough that I've run into some crazy shit, man. And you really have to, that's part of your job, too. You have to be a good diplomat and a good therapist sometimes, a good coach, good mediator. But it doesn't stop me from getting the best out of someone or whatever. I could tell you some things if you want some entertainment without naming names, but, you know, I've bailed people out of jail. I've taken people out of, I've nearly revived people from where I thought they were going to die. I've broken up fights. I just think of all the alcoholism. It's fucking scary. I mean, I've dealt with a lot of crazy shit.
And yeah, people just don't expect it. Like, they never think that you're going through all this. Like, a lot of people who listen to this who are, like, not in bands or whatever, you know, they expect, like, the recording process to be, well, you're in and out in a day. Or, do you know what I mean? And yeah, they don't expect all these crazy shit that goes on as well.
Yeah, sure. And the larger the budget, the larger the band gets, the more it can set a platform for some crazy shit. Because it's like there's all this stuff expected on the band. Now there's money. These are horrible formulas. Like nervousness about expectation. Add money. Add the access to chemicals and drugs, right? Which helps and hurts things. Like, the bigger a band get, the more expectation of the band, the weirder it can be, you know? It's like, I feel bad sometimes for bands I really do. I mean, it's from a fan perspective or let's say a band who's struggling, like, oh, man, it's fucked up. Like, these bands are so lucky. I understand that. But, like, spending time with bands, you know, bands at a certain size with a certain expectation, that can bring a lot of stress and tension into the formula. You know what I mean? It can make it really scary, you know, to the expectation, and people have all kinds of ways of dealing with that, right? It's like some people are just, it's their thing and they handle it, they do well, and other people, they go off the deep end, and you gotta, you and your support has to reel it in. And some of those make great records, by the way. You just never know. But That's what happens. But listen, I don't always do huge bands. You know, I want you guys to know that. I do all sorts of projects from, you know, whatever I think is awesome, from small, large. And sometimes those smaller budgets, they are less stressful and they're more fun. And they, you know, because it's just all up from there. When I look back at also some of the bands of the multiple records I've done with bands, some of those first records where the world wasn't expecting anything, those were the most inspirational ones. We just, you know, sky was the limit, and we would just impressing ourselves, kicking ass. You know, yeah. I love that shit.
Has there been like what was the easiest record you've done to record and produce? I guess it's the easiest band to work with then, I suppose.
Presto Miko, who I just worked with, they're one of the real easy ones. I'm just trying to think. Around that time that you are mentioning Every Time I Die, there's a band called Boys Night Out. I don't even know if you remember them. They're from Canada.
Yeah, Boys Night Out, yeah.
That was like a surprise for me. I didn't even... Carl at the time, who was telling me, who was trying to get me to work with Every Time I Die, he also had Boys Night Out. He was like, hey, I need you to do both of these records, Machine. So you're going to do Every Time I Die, then you're going to write to Boys Night Out. I was like, did not expect that to be such an easy and inspirational, amazing record that we did. What was super easy? I mean, I have a lot of easy records, man. You know, they're not always that way.
Is there one that kind of caught you off guard in terms of just how much you loved working with an artist that you didn't necessarily think you would enjoy it as much?
I would say Armor for Sleep. Armor for Sleep was a band that I wasn't even, when I first went into it, I wasn't sure if I was going to enjoy it, like it. I didn't quite get it until we met and started working together, and that turned out to be one of the most inspirational, exciting records to make. This is a band. Do you remember that band?
Yeah. The Blackout. I think we supported them once in London. Good band. Very, very good band.
And kids just really connect with them. You know, there's something really special, and we shared our love for Pink Floyd, and that was one of those, I just never saw that coming, you know, and I just got so connected to the guys in the band and the experience we had. And that record to this day comes back to me all the time, where people are, as it is, you mentioned, you know, yeah, working with those guys lately. That was their reason for coming to me. They remembered that, and it was a very special record for them in their youth. That just comes back to me all the time. It was such a surprise that how much that connected with so many people, those records. The record was called What to Do When You're Dead. And then there was a second one I did after that called Smile for Them. But both of those were just amazing, inspirational records to make that I just never saw coming.
Yeah. Oh, incredible. But one thing I wanted to mention as well, I know we've kind of talked about it, but when you look at your back catalogue, your discography, you've worked with so many different sounding bands. Like, you know, we've said, like, from Lamb of God to Clutch to Fall Out Boy and As It Is. I mean, you don't
Cobra,
really...
Cobra, Starship.
Yeah, you yeah, don't put forget... up... don't forget Starship.
I love my Starship. Like,
you wouldn't put all of them into one category. And I think it's quite nice to see that you've been able to work with all these different acts and kind of get the best out of them as well. But does it just bring different experiences? I mean, do you take a different mindset into working with a certain act than others?
I do, because here's the deal, guys. In truth, I'm just a wannabe Rick Rubin. If you really know me, it's like, Rick is like, I've never met Rick Rubin. I'm a big fan. I really do very much admire his talent. And this is what's so unique about Rick, is like, Rick is really the world's best A&R guy. Like, Rick is not hardly an engineer much at all. He always hires great engineers. I'm also fans of many of the engineers that he's hired that have become great producers. But you know, Rick is like the ultimate sociologist of music. Why can he go to so many different types of bands and make such amazing records from all kinds of genres, from hip hop to rock? Because really he's really the ultimate sociologist of music as music relates to different groups of people. I like that philosophy and I've adopted that philosophy. And that answers your question, Morgan. It's like, I think that recording is recording, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a technical thing and I'm good at that too and I can figure that out. But it's like, I love getting into genres. And we all like different genres of music, right? But what happens, you know, I push very hard. I think if I just stuck in one lane, I'd probably be richer at this point and and potentially much more successful. But I'll get very excited to jump to a different genre, one that I like. And I like a lot of different music. I produced an Americana record for Blue Water Highway or Kerry Watt. I've done just pure like breakbeat ambient records in the past. I just sort of like, I love doing the research and getting into a genre and seeing what's connecting the dots. I always say cracking the code, what people are connecting to what. And it thrills me, the idea that I can do that to more than one genre of music. It's not easy to do. And I can't say that I'm massively successful in all these genres like Rick Rubin, but it is a thrill for me, and anyone that's willing to let me do that with them, I appreciate. You know, it starts with being a dude, being a bro, being real, and having a conversation. I produced a King Crimson record. This is like the Godfathers of prog rock, and it was simply because I asked. It was simply because I approached them. I was a fan. I used to play them in my college radio station. They heard some things that I did that they thought could be a really interesting mix. We had some great conversations and I wound up producing a King Crimson record. How crazy is that? And we made an incredible record. Incredible, like a record for the time. So it thrills me to do that. It really gets me going every day, the idea of doing that. And it keeps me, you know, out of my comfort zone, and that can be a good thing as well.
Oh, definitely. But with all that as well, like, you know, you've said now that you like exploring different bands and stuff. Is there anyone you've seen as of late that you think kind of, or you'd really like to work with? Is there anyone kind of like on the bucket list or on the wish list for you?
Oh, God. Yeah. I'd love to work with Fever 333. That's like, what they do is sort of the epitome of the most inspired things I am, like the beats and the funky guitar and Jason's voice. That's like really the Rage Against the Machine influence, and that's like the ultimate modern band of my brain love. My musical brain love.
Yeah, I think that would be incredible.
It's either them or actually Rage Against the Machine. Either one I'd be happy with.
Either or. Yeah.
I never thought of that. Yeah, that'd be all right. Yeah, that wouldn't be too bad either, would it?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind producing Rage Against the Machine. Yeah.
Yeah. Now there's a band that just needs an engineer, right? Like Rage Against the Machine is such a thing. They know what they are so much. Like, you could throw an engineer at them and they're going to be just fine. You know?
How can we make that happen? How can we make the Fever 333 and Machine record happen?
Or
shall I just be honest, Jason?
Yeah, you might as well. Jason likes me, but I don't. There's so much, dude. There's so much intense industry drama around that poor guy. Poor Jason. He's so awesome. There's always been this. Our conversation earlier about the hype, right? The tension, the hype. It's like, I wish I could take that away for Jason, because that's always surrounding him, you know. And he has to deal with that. It's like so many industry eyes on him and stuff like that. And things are going great now for him, and that's well deserved, you know. But I'd love to do that record, and I'd hate everything else that had to do with all the industry drama that I sure would inevitably revolve around a record like that.
Yeah.
For sure, right? It'd be so intense. Fuck that shit. Just put us in a room and let us fucking while out.
I use a strange one. I think a Machine and Youngblood record would be insane.
Ooh. Oh, word.
That'd be good. Yeah.
That would be awesome. I would love to do it with, and you know, I'd love to do it with my boy Zach Cervini. So Zach Cervini, who does Youngblood, is a Machine, one of the Machine, you know, original interns. There's so many. There's Will Putney.
Yeah.
There's That's Zach mad. Cervini. Yeah. These kids that are just, they grew up through me and are crushing. Zach is crushing out in California. And he's like, I would love to do it with Zach as well, because he's doing all that stuff now and it's amazing. I love Youngblood as well. They're like a big, I actually just, you know, nerdishly listen to that stuff all the time. I love it. You know who also I'm feeling that would be great too? Enter Shikari, which of course, you guys know. Have you heard the new record?
Yes, very good.
That would be, and I know they're Pitch Shifter fans, because the one time I met them, like ages ago, like early in their career in New York, that was the one little dialogue we had that, you know, our common like for Pitch Shifter.
I'd imagine that record would be insane with you two. With you guys, like you and them, that would be the oof. Word. A Machine Bring Me the Horizon record would be good.
What? Sure,
I'm on it.
Bring me the Bring me the Horizon, motherfuckers. What's up with that?
but with everything as well. I mean, is there any way people can contact you if they want to work with you?
I guess the question is, how do people submit to work with you then?
Yeah, because I know you do a lot of mixing and mastering for people as
yes.
well.
Yes. Yeah, that's kind of like a new COVID side hustle thing I'm doing. I'm like, you know, I've always been, when you talk about mastering, I've always, as of so many years now, often asked to master as well as mixing. It's just a more and more common thing. Good at that. So it's like, as like a COVID side hustle, I've been kind of putting myself out there as a way to just connect with more young engineer producers and get relationships. So that's been really cool. But you can, and I love doing it. So you can always reach out for me, and I do it in a really cool way where it's very affordable. And also I do like either mastering or like a mix finisher, sort of like a, you know, mix critique, mix consulting / mastering, which is, you know, you don't get. It's like normally when I would send my stuff out to mastering guys, I always appreciated when I had a mastering guy that had really good ears and I trusted. And, you know, sometimes they would hear stuff that would make it difficult for them to master, and they would just master what they had. They never came back to me and said, hey, you know, if you did this or that with your mix, I could make this or that this better with the mastering. I thought, what a really cool thing. What a really cool relationship. So I offer that kind of thing with my mastering and get to connect to a lot of younger guys. You're saying, as far as connecting with me, you can, if you want to connect with me for whatever it is, producing, mixing, mastering, I have a website. It's www.machineshopprod.com, which is really cool. And dudes, do you know about Machine Shop Live, this new thing I'm doing?
No.
I need to tell you about this. Dude, what is up? I can't believe this hasn't come up yet in this chat. Machine Shop Live is, I have a YouTube channel. It's called Machine Shop. You can check it out. YouTube/Machine Shop Live. So basically, I started this thing as a big plan, and I just started this thing literally like the week before COVID hit. So I invite bands into, I sort of, my beautiful barn studio, I've kind of turned it into a modern multimedia studio, right? Like I've had so many good experiences with bands coming into the studio, bringing videographers and getting great content, that I really started thinking, wow, how can I offer more of this kind of thing? So the Machine Shop now is completely set up and video ready. There's like full-on video lighting. We have multi-switchers. It's called Machine Shop Live. We invite bands, and normally it's supposed to be coming off tour. We do some live streaming, some interviewing, hanging out. They perform, and then I give these bands, and it's free for bands. I give these bands two tracks that initially go up on my YouTube channel, full edited, mixed produced tracks, that just incredible live performances. We started this thing off. It was incredible. It was like the first 2 weeks I had all this stuff lined up, and this is when COVID hit, right? So I had the Contortionist in. They were first, and we did them. That was incredible. You can check that out. Next up was 4 Years Strong that was supposed to come in. Val Amaya was supposed to come in, and then literally like COVID hit, and then all these bands that were coming from tour literally just had to go home. I've been maintaining it pretty good. I'm supposed to put out a video a week. That's like my goal, you know? And this is something I've been thinking of for years doing. It's just a way to sort of, you know, just a way to kind of, it's like my version of social media. I don't have to say, I'm kind of hung up with doing regular social media. Like, look at me on Twitter, look at me on Instagram. It's like, I feel like if I invite bands in and help bands, I could do social media. It kind of like solves two things at once. I'm comfortable doing social media if it's me helping other people, and oh yeah, I'm in it too. And then I'm cool with social media, but I'm like super, super insecure and imposter syndrome about social media with like, look at me mix this, look at me do this, look how dope I am here. I just can't do it. I'm like, it cheeses me out too much. So it was kind of birthed off that fear and insecurity, but it's this amazing thing. Please check it out. It's called Machine Shop Live. I think by the time this airs, we'll be putting out Fire from the Gods, which I'm mixing right now. One of the things I'm mixing right now. And it's dope. It's like bands can, it's also, by the way, it's just started funded by a Patreon, which you guys all know all too well.
Yes.
And this is the idea. It's like, I kind of like what you guys are doing. I want to grow and create a community where people that love these kinds of bands can come talk and in a way kind of dictate the show, run the show, offer bands, offer what other additional content to do. If you're a member, you get all these great perks and we do live stuff where it's very intimate with the bands. And then once a week, there's a produced, directed live video that comes out that they look shit hot. They look and sound shit hot. And of course, my studio and my mixing work is on every one, which is a nice little bonus for what I do, you know? So far, so great. It's a new thing, and it's going to be a thing. It's like, it's my version of a podcast. It's my version of, you know, whatever. Awesome. And it's going to
It's a real great idea.
Please check it out. Yeah. It's dope.
Oh, and yeah, speaking of Patreon, I wanted to thank you.
We shouldn't
have done it at the top of the show, really, but we didn't. We completely forgot. Yeah, thank you so much for being a Patreon. Yeah. That was insane. Well, I remember seeing it. I saw it, and I messaged Marcy, and I was like, what the fuck's going on?
Well, Marcy Jacobson, my girl. Yes.
Shout out to Marcy. Yes.
Shouts to Marcy, dude. Very, we're talking about the rap rock days. Back in the day, she was A&R. She gave me a big opportunity early on. I really appreciate that. But Marcy was like, oh, you'll love this. You've got some of your bands on it. Checked it out. I was like, oh, this is an awesome podcast. Guys, I love that you're doing this.
Thanks.
I absolutely, podcasts have become such a big part of my life. You know, every day running with you guys or a couple podcasts that I really like. It's just a great, great thing. It's such a wonderful thing to do. And also thanks, of course, for having me on.
Thank you for
all of it. Thank you for the music. Thank you for being a Patreon. Thank you for being absolutely lovely. Thank you for being fun. Yeah. We did have one guest on once who was super miserable that we didn't even put out then.
That
was fun. But yeah, you have been an absolute delight.
Some of the stories you've told us being an absolute great insight into the whole world of everything. So thank you so much, man.
For sure.
Yeah, let's try and do one in the flesh sometime.
I mean, if you want to invite us to come out to Texas and when all this is over and hang out in the studio with a band, I mean, I wouldn't say no. So
let's do it. Let's come out. Let's blow some shit up. Let's shoot some fucking guns. Let's cook some barbecue.
Yeah.
Let's throw some axes. Do some man stuff in Texas. Drive a pickup truck. Y'all ever driving a pickup truck?
God, imagine me trying to do all that. No, that's that. Oh,
no, you'd be dreadful, Mark. You'd be dreadful with a gun. It'd be awful. But yeah, cheers. Thanks again so much for doing this. And nice. Yeah, good luck with everything. And hopefully we get to speak soon.
All right, fellas. All right, you too. Cheers. You're listening
to Sappy Podcast. Yeah.
Stop. That was too much. Yes. Thank you very much to Machine. What an absolutely lovely chat, inspiring chat as well. It's got me excited for music. What a great story. Unbelievable the amount of people he's worked with who we love and appreciate.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane in the membrane. But it's so good to hear some of those stories. Just like, you know, making Randy from Lamb of God run around, creating a whole bloody chamber for Mitch from Suicide Silence. I mean, these are things you'd never expect when you head into a studio with a band. I mean, like, as a fan, you never imagine these things are going on behind the scenes. But it was great to find out some of these stories. As I said earlier, he's produced so many of our favorite albums. And I was glad he got to explain a little bit more why so much different aspects come in with mixing and mastering and just nerdy things, really.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, see, like, when we talked about having him on, like, we've had Jason Perry on before, who's a producer, but he's also a front man, so we had, you know, a stuff to talk about as well.
And we've had Matt Good on from First to Last and people like that, so
true. But yeah, but this one, I wanted somebody who was a producer outright, pretty much, who had worked with some amazing bands. And Machine ticked all the boxes. I think he was very helpful. He was very sincere. And yeah, for a lot of people who don't know what a producer does, he explains what his version of producing is. And yeah, it was just super interesting to hear all the stories and working with Jared Way and my favourite Dal Plumbo. Like, it's just all bonkers. So thanks again to Machine. Thanks to Marcy Jacobson for hooking it up. Hopefully we get to see Machine in the flesh at some point to do one of these with. Maybe he'll come back over again with Presto Mico, because he's been over here lately with them.
Yeah,
so
that would be good.
It would be nice to see him and them. Yes, thanks again, Machine. We love you. You're a top fucking chap. Top chap. Anybody who's thinking about recording and wants one of the world's most badass producers, get in touch with Machine.
We should take up his offer of coming to see him in Texas and just take Raiders and just make a record. I'll just do social media for you, and you can just have a...
Well, why don't we just do a Sappening record where me and you just sing different hits?
What? Can I finally get the Mo Dick album out? Can I do my...
Well, yeah, because, yeah, like Machine mentioned, he got into, like, hip-hop and stuff first. Surely Machine produces the Mo Dick record.
And you got to think, right, my voice singing is absolutely awful anyway, but he's so good as a producer. He could turn that into something that sounds pretty decent, I can imagine. So we could, I mean, this could be biggest thing. This could be money right out of fingertips, yeah?
Yeah, Morgie's a producer, he is, but not a fucking magician. He's never going to make that voice sound any good.
But anyway, don't forget to go and check out Machine Shop Live, as he mentioned in the episode, with everything else he's doing. Head over to his website to see a full list of his discography and how you can get involved with him. He can mix your stuff, master it, everything. Perfect person to get involved if you're making music. And why not come and join us, Machine, and the rest of our wonderful Sappening Patreon community at patreon.com/Sappening to be a family member and get even more bonus crazy content.
Yes, if you've enjoyed any of the 96 episodes, 97 technically with the bonus episode we did as well. Yeah, if you've enjoyed any of those mad episodes, please think about supporting us. If you can't support us right now, that's absolutely fine, and we understand. But you must stop listening immediately, because that's just cheeky, innit? It's just cheeky. I don't come around to your house and just fucking take whatever you were doing, do I? Anyway, only joking. If you can support us, please think about it. If you can't, that's absolutely fine. Yeah, patreon.com/Sappening.
And don't forget to go and follow us on our social media pages at Sappening Pod on the Twitter and Instagram.
At SAPPENINPOD. That's at the S, which looks like a snake. A for apple. P for Peter. P for Pan. E for elephant. N for Nigel. I for indigo. Oh, that's an actual police one. N for Nigel again. P for penis. O for octopus. And D for delicious. That's at Sappening Pod. Yeah, don't remember it like that.
No,
if you listen to this and you remember it off the way I just spelt that, you're some sort of Rain Man, and fair play to you. Good on you.
Yeah, and make sure you are subscribing wherever you listen to the podcast as well. Go back and listen to some of your other favourite artists. If you enjoy Machine's work, we've chatted to loads of bands he's had in the studio before, and there's definitely someone that you will enjoy. Quickly,
promise.
As well, I wanted to say, we said about 2000 Trees Festival, Raiders is announced.
Yes.
Yes. Another band announced is our favourite to No Devotion. So my message to everyone is, please wear a mask and don't be a dick and social distance and look after each other, because I really want to go and see them play that field next summer. So if I don't get to, I'm going to be very sad. I'm going to take it out on every one of you. So do your part so Mo Dick can watch No Devotion in 2021. Thank you very much.
Fucking hell, you won't like him when he's angry. Oh, you won't like him, Morgan, when he's angry. If that comes about and doesn't happen, Morgan is going to lose his shit. And I don't think anybody's ready for that, right? So do us all a favour. It doesn't hurt. There's no... The government's not controlling us by wearing them, right? You don't walk around with your cock out, right? You wear trousers like a human. So do the decent thing and cover your ugly nose and mouth with a mask, for God's sake. I hope somebody takes that on. Someone's like, do you know what? I didn't used to wear a mask, but he is right. Mind, I don't want to blow my cock out. tidy.
And as well, our friends and last week's guests and yours truly have just announced a special live stream that they are doing on October 3rd as well. So go back and listen to last week's episode. Go and check that out. And the album is called Self Care, because we messed up in the beginning and said self-love. So just want to say that, because Mickey from Stan Atlantic gave Sean a lot of beef online for that, to add to the fuel to the fire that Sean is going to punch him when he next sees him. That's not a threat, it's a statement.
Oh, he's going to be known as Lie Down Atlantic when I see him. That's all I can say about that. He's fucking having it. He won't even hear this because it's not one of his friends listening. One of his friends on it. But he's fucking having it. Nobody tell him about this either, because he will listen, and then we'll get we'll have more online beef. But let's stop talking about online beef. Let's talk about online love.
Okay.
Let's talk about some of the most important people in our lives to this day, Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our Patreon. Check out patreon.com/sappening. But we have the elite members of our Patreon to thank, which are as follows. I've done all of you a bit, but they're what you normally do.
Wow.
I can see that you were like, but I've done it. So here you go. Thank you very much to... Shut up, Ben. I'm still going. Thank you very much to Kylie Wheeler. Happy birthday for 3 days ago to Mayumi Liwaway, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Janelle Caston, Amadou Nibana, Sarah James, Nathan Croshaw, Kelly Young, Dilly the Truth is out there, but I'm not going to show you where, Grimwood, Ohio is for Emo Chester, Michael Engler, Liam Connolly, Drew Styles, Tim Foyle Elmut, Till Foyle, Kelly Irwin, Dana Lasnova, Tom Owen, it's my birthday tomorrow. Well, that haven't helped a bit. Who's that? What do you mean tomorrow? What, like Saturday? Or have I now? Because think it, right? If you're one of the patrons and you're changing your name in this group, right? Have a think of when this podcast might come out, right? This one's going to come out Friday now. So whenever you change your name, it's my birthday tomorrow. I don't know when that is. Tomorrow never comes. Happy birthday anyway. Kate Gentleman prefers Ginger's Puttack. Johnny Phillips. Scott, I love the do your own research reply Jones. Simon Amos. Ollie, don't be a dick. Wear your bloody mask, Amesbury. Right on, Ollie. Kate Stevenson. Samuel Griffiths. Jenny Munster. Emily Senegals. Lucy Deeds. Martina McManus. John and Emma. Kelly, where's the link, Mallory? Becky Andy, Erin Howard, Louis Cook, Marcy Jigsman, Jason, I have all the facts, but I'm not going to prove it. Redia, Sandra Kuachik, Mike Cunningham, Charles Livy Cropper, James McNaught, Tallulah Grant, Stuart McNaught, Kelly Cannon, Lydia Henderson, Tony Michael, Jenny Robinson, Sharif Awadali, Nuala Clark, Craig Harris, Everything Has Turned to Shit, Fuck Yeah, Jodie Shannon, and last by no means least, Kerris Andrews. Thank you so much to all those people. Some of those names are referring to an argument I had with an anti-masker on my Facebook, where the guy spent 7 hours telling me to do the research, and I just kept replying, where's the link, Julian? Where's the link? Because he had absolutely no proof for anything he said. And it turned out, his information, which he hadn't read online, apparently, but he wanted me to do my research. So how could I research it if it's not online? That's weird, Julian, isn't it? In the end, it was two nurses and a doctor, apparently, that told him. But I don't believe that. And also, Julian's wife was so bored of him being spanked online by me and serious critical people who can think with minds, that she DM'd me and asked me to block Julian because he was embarrassing himself so much. So thank you very much to all those people who saw that argument and saw how silly that fellow was. I hope you're all well and you're all wearing masks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw that and it got a lot of attention. Like that got a lot of interaction, Sean.
It did. And then the thing is, when the plonker realised he had no comeback, he deleted his first post, which literally deleted a thread of like 190 comments. Someone was good because he was saying, thing is, see, more people are having it because we're testing for it. So it's like, alright, so you wouldn't, my main point was, so if you thought you found a lump and you thought you might have cancer, you wouldn't go and get tested for it, would you? And he was like, I won't even go into it. We haven't got time.
Anyway,
we haven't got time.
Anyway, thank you very much to everyone involved in our wonderful Patreon community. You mean the world to us. We love you very, very much. And you're all bloody superstars. So thank you. Thank you to Machine for having a chat with us. Thank you to Marcy Jacobson for pushing and making this happening. She is super bloody awesome as well. Thank you to Sean. He is currently wearing a spaceman jacket that you can't see, but it's there.
In my house as well, mind. I'm wearing it in my house.
Yeah, you're not in space.
Yeah, I saw it the other day and it was so cheap. I was like, I must have it because it's shiny. I'm like a magpie. I'm like a magpie when it comes to clothes. If it's not black, if it's shiny or glows in the dark, I'm interested. So black, shiny, glow in the dark, Sean's interested.
Nice. Anything else?
Yeah, tidy. Anyway, that's the end of the podcast. Oh, check out Raiders, at Raiders Band UK on stuff. Oh, don't, whatever. You don't care anyway. Nobody gives a shit. Destructive What's out now. Oh, and a cover we did of Thrice song, The Earth Will Shake, apparently is out now as well.
I'm online as well, I think, when cares. You probably don't. But.
Yeah, at @MHRichards_. That. Yeah. So, yeah, check him out. Love Machine, love Marcy, love you, Morg.
Oh, I love you too.
Love the three M's. Let's get out of here. Sapnin!
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.